You had Maduro basically hand over all the oil on a silver platter. If that's not the objective, what is?
It increasingly looks like a sort of Grenada and Noriega on steroids, where it's not really about the resources, even because Maduro, as you note, and as Trump has acknowledged, has offered up all those resources. You want to come in for the rare earths? Come on in. You want the emeralds? You want the gold? You want the oil? Come on
Incredible.
In. You know, open invitation. He gave it. He literally gave away the store. He just wants to sustain the Bolivarian revolution as he understands it in Venezuela, but he's willing to give up those resources. And part of that is because they haven't really developed the oil resource as well. Yeah. There was a lot of mismanagement by both Hugo Chavez and Maduro about managing their currency and managing the oil development. So he's open to replacing, because I heard different excuses. Oh, it's about replacing China and Russia. He's already given that up. Maduro's already given that up. And yet we're going to forfeit that just so we can put in our own little tin cup dictator there who is not deeply popular, who, if anybody studied the history of these political movements, I mean, FARC is right on the border and goes back and forth between Colombia and Venezuela all the time. They would be happy to work with TDA and the rest at creating a completely chaotic anarchistic state in Venezuela, which then we're not going to be getting any oil out of there. So it is utterly baffling beyond just being narco Marco's policy that Trump is just deferring to. You have Soros, Scotty Bessent dictating financial policy globally. Hence, you get the Russophobic mindset and mishandling of the Chinese negotiations that we got from Bessent. We're seeing the same thing with he's letting narco Marco run his foreign policy. Little Marco, with his Napoleonic complex, who's always been obsessed with regime change everywhere, but especially in Latin America, from his Cuban origins and Cuban roots, that runs very deep. But they did a poll survey of the Venezuelans and Cubans in Miami and asked them, are you for a military intervention in Venezuela? And they said no. That's how unpopular it is, because they realize that doesn't usually end well. That script has a certain same ending. You can change the preview. You can change the prediction. You can change the trailer. It's going to end the same way, and it's usually disaster for America.
Maduro offered everything in his country, all the natural resources. He even recorded a message to you in English recently offering mediation. What should we do to stop that?
He has offered everything. He's offered everything. You're right. You know why? Because he doesn't want to fuck around with the United States.
And then I guess Trump just says, yeah, well, but we're going to anyway. So
it feels like ego. It feels like I describe that, we're seeing the death throes of the old neocon deep state American empire that is coming out, that is dying, screaming in anguish, pretending it. I think Trump pretended he had leverage with China. Turned out he didn't. Pretended he had leverage with Russia. Turns out he didn't. Pretended he had leverage with Iran. Turns out he didn't. So I think that he wants to show, we're still big. We're still important. We can take out this little country over here. Same reason why Reagan went into Grenada. Oh, yeah, we're still big, even though we're running away from the Middle East because that policy badly backfired and the deaths of hundreds of Marines. We're going to take down Grenada. Yeah, there we go. And now we're going to take down Caracas. And it's more like he wants to show off American power. Like he recently said, well, we're going to do nuclear weapons testing, too, because look at these Russian nuclear weapons that we don't have an answer for. But he doesn't want to admit that publicly. Instead, he wants to pretend we have more nukes than they do. They've had more nukes than us since the 70s. But the independently confirmed all over the place. It feels like an old man. It's like the boomer con side of Trump is coming out watching too much Fox. That's what your brain on too much Fox looks like. It ends up looking like Trump 47. And he wants to show off, say, no, we still matter. We still have power. And it's like, this is a fruitless, futile way to express that power. Our founders understood the best way we express that power is by being the light and flame of liberty for the rest of the world, not by going abroad, searching for monsters to destroy. And all fact, Trump wants to do is show off his machismo by finding monsters to destroy.
Yeah, and let's just start cutting that list down, but it looks like they're trying to expand it. All the focus so far that we've been talking about here, especially, and most of it in the public realm here, has been on Venezuela for obvious reasons. But in that comment, in that soundbite from Lindsey Graham a second ago, he added in that Trump is thinking about military power in Venezuela and Colombia. And he said, he's going to be talking to us then. I hadn't seen that conversation had already happened. But why do you suppose that, where in the world is Colombia being thrown into this mix when, at least up until just a number of months ago, Colombia had pretty good relations with the United States, regardless of what policy was or party was in power?
Yeah, it's an interesting choice. Now, I mean, if you want to deal with cocaine, Colombia kind of makes sense. But Colombia can't get control of its cocaine supply. We're going to suddenly get control of our cocaine supply. But I think the Colombian president, that escalated after the Colombian president went out and made some inflammatory statements towards Trump. I get it. It's machismo against machismo, you know, very Latino style. But, you know, these are bad hombres, as Trump would like to say. But all dragging us into these foreign interventions is going to do, and what it usually leads to, is more chaos, more immigration problems, more refugee problems. I mean, like, people are complaining about the SNAP benefits and all the refugees that are on those SNAP benefits. But it's, why are they refugees in the first place? Because of America's stupid wars. That's why. Otherwise, they wouldn't even be here to have that problem presented to us. And it's the same logic he's going down. And it's like he's trying to become like a Cadillo of the 1950s or something. I mean, people forget a lot of the drug trade all really started when we decided to help Klaus Barbie with Pinochet and the rest in Bolivia in the late 1970s, early 80s, as a DEA agent stumbled across in the mid 80s in Argentina. We created this problem ourselves, and now we're going to blame everybody else for it. But it's a really weak, lame pretext and fig leaf for trying to say America's still strong, America's still powerful, America's still the best, by picking on some small country that can't put up a meaningful fight that is only going to lead to our own political problems back at home.
And speaking of problems back at home, in the last bit of time we have here, what is your assessment of how this would play with the MAGA supporters? A lot of folks, we've had some on our channel here, absolutely voted for Trump because he was talking about, I don't want any more stupid wars, we don't want regime change, all those things. And now then, I mean, he claims that he's ended seven wars, or eight wars, I guess, is what he's claiming now. The one in the Middle East is not even an end of a war. It's a ceasefire with the hostage exchange, and all the details, difficult part, hadn't even been negotiated yet. Obviously, anything with the Russia-Ukraine war is heading towards a Russian military victory, so no end in that one. But then now that you're talking about over here, you could be literally starting one. And Lindsey Graham also said that he thought this would be a layup. A regime change war would be a layup. I kid you not. It won't be. And so what is going to happen to – well, let's just look at it from a couple of angles. First of all, from the MAGA supporters, what are they going to do if, instead of ending all these wars, he doesn't end the really big ones and then he starts another one in our own backyard?
I mean, I think the part of his base – there's a part of his base that's kind of boomer con, America, F yeah, kind of routine, those sort of, you know, I call it fake machismo. Those people will be fine and satisfied with it. And the people that are like hardcore Trump loyalists that Trump can do no wrong – they'll be okay with it. The problem is that's not the 100% of his base. And, you know, I call politics, as Kevin Phillips described it, it's math. You know, are you adding or subtracting? And if you're subtracting, by golly, you better be adding more than you're subtracting. All Trump is doing with these policies is subtracting. He's not adding anybody that's going to suddenly turn around and be a supporter on the Democratic side of the aisle. Instead, he's giving the Democratic Party back its capacity to become the anti-war party again. Which will boost them politically, domestically in the United States. And it's already showing up in some of the Virginia and New Jersey gubernatorial elections that are, and New York City mayor's elections that are upcoming. You're sort of young, low propensity MAGA voter, low propensity meaning they don't always vote. They're not turning out in these elections. That a chance at winning the New Jersey governorship is probably already done because of these foreign policy adventurism. Mm. And so I think it will continue to sabotage and undermine his own base. It will also destroy his legacy. I think he's obsessed with, you know, legacy. He wants to be known as the peace president. And maybe the ticket is, hey, if I start eight new wars and then solve them, I can say I solved eight wars. You know, that kind of like our Iran deal, kind of like, I mean, how do you take credit for peace in Iran when we bombed them? Okay. It seems to be he has been misled down a perilous path. Swampy Susie is his chief of staff. She comes from the old Reagan era, big corporate lobbyist, deep ties to the military-industrial complex. And he's ended up facilitating the very group that he was empowered and elected to defeat. And it will depress and distress a good portion of his base. And it will undermine the Republicans in the near short term. But I don't think it will defeat the rise of populism and anti-war sentiment in the United States or the world. It will reinforce it. and they'll just find another mechanism and means of expressing that anti-war sentiment, whether it's another party, whether it's another candidate or someone else. Because all this will do is reinforce what those of us that have said we should be our constitutional republic, not this deep state driven foreign policy, have been saying when they see that this turn into a debacle and disaster like all the other ones have.
Well, let me just dovetail off what you just said there, because it's something that has a lot of interest to me, and it's something I cover here on the channel periodically, and that is the political dysfunction here. I mean, I my particular personal view is this whole government shutdown is just another example of the pathetic debauchery of the two-party system, that they can't solve anything. They love to throw rocks at each other, and they don't seem to care anything about the people in between that are solved, because this problem could literally be solved in an afternoon if they just got into a room, but they don't. Now, you made a comment there a second ago I wanted to go down. You said one of these days, whether it's this or something else, could potentially cause a rise to where a third party might be considered possible. Now, up to this point, that anytime there's been talk about a third party, it's always like, well, all you're going to do is drag votes away from this party or that party, or people are still say, well, for all its flaws, it's still going to, we still have to have two party. But are you suggesting we may finally be coming to a point to where, no, the disgust may be high enough to actually form a third party?
Yeah, my view was Trump was the last chance of the two-party system to prove its sustainability in the future of American politics. And if Trump fails to deliver on things like his opposition to war, then I think that it will show that the two-party system is so bankrupt and so broke, people have no choice but to seek out a third-party option. And third parties usually change the debate and dialogue in American politics, even when they don't gain power, by forcing one of the other two parties to adopt the positions and policies of that third party. But what may happen here is that America tends to parallel the politics of the UK. And right now what's happening in the UK is the two parties that have dominated for more than a century in that country may not even exist in 5 years, in the Tories and Labour, being completely replaced by reform, solely because reform is at least outside the system. What the system saw in Boris Johnson was those Midlands voters, unhappy with Labour, found themselves equally unhappy with the Tories and said, no more, no mas, we want complete revolutionary change. And usually American politics is not far behind what you're seeing in the UK, whether you're Margaret Thatcher previewed Ronald Reagan, you know, John Major previewed Poppy Bush, Tony Blair mirrored Bill Clinton in the rise of neoliberalism. All of that shows the key is going to be Trump delivering to this constituency, or the two-party system will have proven to the American people it is no longer a viable mechanism of political governance. And I think, and then you have people lurking in the side who are talking about the possibility, who could, because of their individual resources and platform ownership, take a third party and make it popular overnight. And that's, of course, Elon Musk. When the richest man in the world is like, maybe we need a third party. And if Trump continues to fail, he may say, I should go back and revisit that third party idea. And all of a sudden, then you could have a whole different political dynamic in the United States. Historically, when our two parties fail, third parties do emerge.
And one would imagine, if that scenario you painted a second ago, that we get bogged down into something here, the Republicans do lose the House, the Democrats get it, and it turns into this just morass of all this investigations and another impeachment or who knows what, that will seem to even deepen the idea that the Democrats aren't a viable alternative, and they better find a third one or we're going to be in trouble. I mean, how do you see it?
Oh, that's exactly right. And the Democrats, by not embracing the anti-war message that Trump is gifting them on their plate, is proving to their own voters, oh, this system doesn't work. Our parties don't, neither party works for those that want a different foreign policy, that want a different domestic focus of our domestic leaders. And I think that's we saw it, like the rise of the Jeffersonian movement was in response to the failure of the first early parties. Same with the Jacksonian movement. Same with the Abraham Lincoln Republican Party movement. Same with the populists at the end of the 19th century, progressives at the early beginning of the 20th century. People like Upton Sinclair making surges in a wide range of places. In fact, you can go back and look in the South and you'll find overlaps between Upton Sinclair support and Donald Trump support. which may shock some people in modern age, but that gives you an idea. These are deeply rooted protest-driven voter constituencies and communities. And if they can't find expression through the within the two-party system, which is what Trump is educating them on with his attacks on Thomas Massey, if he's actually successful at that, the message to the libertarians will be, we can no longer work within the two-party apparatus. And he's teaching them the wrong lesson if he wants to sustain the Republican Party brand long term. So I think that if Trump continues down this perilous deep state path of foreign policy that he was elected to overturn, the American people will say we have no choice but to seek out a third party option.
And other than Elon Musk, do you see any other nascent movements that might get some interest from anybody, or is it too early?
It probably is, but I'd say someone like Thomas Massey is someone to watch. If someone like, you know, like we'll also see in South Carolina, Lady Lindsey Graham is being contested by Paul Dance. Paul Dance, you know, great populist, deeply anti-war guy, anti-establishment guy. If he's able to win within the Republican primary apparatus and Massey's able to hold on against the primary challenges funded by big billionaires against him, then that would give some faith to those anti-war constituencies that they can have success within their own parties. If they're unsuccessful and unavailing, then those constituencies will say, we have no choice. We've been kicked out of the House. So we have no choice but to look for a new house to occupy, a new place of shelter for our political views and beliefs. And I think we're seeing in other parts around the world, whether it's Le Pen's rise in France, whether it's the AfD in Germany, you're seeing countries that have share certain political trends with us saying the third party, a new party option has to be the only way we will be able to get the political change we keep voting for, but not getting.
Fascinating. Well, that's very interesting. I'd love to have you back on in the future to go down this path in a little bit more detail, because I certainly am sold on that fact. And I'm disgusted with the two-party system, and I can't imagine I'm the only one. So I'd love to hear some of your views on a future show.
Absolutely.
Well, but listen, but really appreciate you providing such clarity on these issues today, because look, I mean, the bottom line is, I mean, a lot of people are not just anti-war, but just anti-stupid war. And I'm a former four-time combat veteran, and I'm all about a strong national defense, but I am emphatically against adventurism, which is what will be going on. And I think there's a lot of people for that, and I really appreciate you clarifying the legality issue so people don't get too lost in the weeds about, well, just because of the narrative that something is legal when it's not, because we better continue to understand we're need to be a country governed by the rule of law, or we're going to be in trouble one of these days. And let's hope we don't get to that point. But thank you so much for coming on today.
Absolutely. Glad to be here.
And our pleasure. And thank you very much for you guys coming on to us. Be sure and like and subscribe if you haven't so far. Helps us more than you may know. Look forward to seeing you on the next episode of the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.